Welcome to We Mentor Mondays podcast with Nancy. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery. Learn something new from our stories today. Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy. Well, today in the studio for our third session, we've got Mary Hayes Greco. She is the author of the book Unconditional Forgiveness and the author of The New Kitchen Mystic. She also is the founder and director of the Midwest Institute for Forgiveness Training and has taught people how to forgive for over 25 years. Her work has taken her all over the world, and it has profoundly changed my life. And so she's in the studio to help us continue our journey. And before we finish our session today, she's going to go over the 8 steps of forgiving another person.
Mm-hmm.
There is a way. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Yes, I'm so glad you're here for a third session.
Ooh, me too.
Yes. So we've been kind of working our way through some of your childhood and just talking a breadth of different topics along the way, including business planning and views on that, and how the business planning is designed for you to write the plan as kind of, it reminds me actually of a number of different drafts that you have for a book.
Yeah. And with it for a while.
Yeah. You finish the plan, but I don't think it's ever ready to be published because it takes so much refinement. You know, when you're putting into practice.
Right. Well, there's the plan on paper, and then there's what's happening on the ground
that that you got to adapt to.
Ooh, respond to.
Yes.
Yeah, and adjust your course as you go along.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, good. Well, how are you feeling?
Oh, good. I'm happy to be sitting here with you and Mike.
Excellent. So when did you notice that you were beginning signs of being a writer and an author, a spiritual teacher, a pragmatic emotional healer? How did you evolve into becoming a competent business owner? And Midwest Institute of Forgiveness is not your first venture. And then you had
Describe
a mentor
betrayal.
For 10 years.
Yes.
And,
okay.
You know, so there's a lot that has gone, that you've done in your life so far.
Right. Well, let's see. I remember, as I said last time, experimenting with unconditional love and forgiveness and justice communication issues as a child. I cared about these things.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, that was something that was just part of my, you know, interacting with my friends.
And you were very aware of it because of the work that your parents were involved in?
Yeah, they were civil rights workers
yeah.
when they first met.
And so what does that mean if they were civil rights workers
well,
at that time?
They
in
were
the
getting
70s.
Together in the late 1940s, right after World War II to early 50s. Before it hit the national headlines, mm-hmm. there was people all over this country meeting in coffee shops. You know, black people and white people that were trying to get to know each other and
sure.
trying to break down the lines. Like the neighborhood I grew up in Chicago had a line. You did not go past Vincennes Street. They did not come past Vincennes Street, you know, or people would beat each other up. It was like very, very, you know, restricted how much people would interact from different races in Chicago. And my parents were part of a Catholic worker tradition. That's Dorothy Day. Who started soup kitchens in New
oh,
York.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
yeah, so they were admirers of Dorothy Day's work. And there was some kind of a coffee shop in what their friends thought was a dicey neighborhood, but where, you know, people who believed like them were getting together with black people that wanted to break down these divides and these walls. So they were doing that for a few years as they met. And so it was always and they had a lot of books and reading around the house around race and civil rights concerns. So I was sort of steeped in it. So that was just part and parcel of my life as a child. And then when I got to high school, I was just, I fell in love with philosophy and spirituality. I fell in love with Henry David Thoreau and Gibran, Khalil Gibran. I was always carrying books around and quoting things to my friends in the cafeteria. Listen to this. Listen to this. Isn't that amazing that it's so true? And they'd be looking at me like, I don't know what you're talking about. But but if they were having problems, they would tell each other, did you get Hayes to pray for you? Did you ask Hayes to pray? They called me Hayes. Did you? Because they felt like I had better prayers than they did.
I had like the red phone,
you know, on the desk to God, you know, or something. I don't know. So they must have recognized that I just had a spirituality present, because they would always come to me for.
Did you know in hockey when they have a discrepancy, they used to call Toronto?
Oh, right.
So you were Toronto. You were that.
Yeah.
Call.
So that was happening, and then my mother. God bless her. She was so beleaguered and busy a lot of the time with 8 children and an actively alcoholic husband for many years. But she, you know, she probably did not have it in her to make sure.
My
dad was drinking till I was 15.
Okay.
Yeah. So she did not have it in her to make sure like my hair was combed getting out in the morning. But if I wrote something, if I wrote a poem or if I was moved by something in a book, she would wipe her hands on her apron and sit down and listen.
Oh.
And she would listen to my words, you know, and my thoughts and my heart. And she always got me a journal for my birthday every year. She got me a journal, and I filled them up. I have a stack of 20 full journals from those growing up years. And I remember she got me a poster for my birthday that was from the Robert Frost poem about taking the different path. I took the road less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. And I think she just recognized that I was going to have a different path, that I was not going to be your regular career track kind of girl, you know, and that I was going to be in having adventures and misadventures and all sorts of things. So anyway, I graduated from high school, went to DePaul, where my dad taught, majored in this order, psychology, art, and speech and drama. And I found my way through that track because the psychology department was terrible. The art department was terrible. But the speech and drama department was alive. It was full of alive teachers and students and a lot of passion and fun. And I was very drawn to them. And meanwhile, I was not a person who could finish her sentences in public. I was so shy. But something in me knew that I had to become able to speak in public.
Sure.
So I shook and just rattled and rolled and shook my way through all my speech and drama classes, like painfully frightened and shy, making my way through speeches and doing little programs and acting in a play. And people were looking at me like, oh my God, what are you doing here? Somebody shoot this poor woman and put her out of her misery. Why is she being a speech major? Well, it's because here I am with the microphone.
Yeah.
You know, and microphones began to follow me early in my life. It just seemed like from the time I moved to Minneapolis and I got involved with the co-ops and the women's movement, and I met my husband and we started having our family. But it seemed like no matter what I get involved with, pretty soon there's a microphone in front of me and I'm talking, I'm articulating things.
Okay.
So that has continued to this day as we see. Here
yes,
I am
exactly.
with the microphone. So so the path was kind of an alternative path, and you know, moving to South Minneapolis during the co-op days, you got to experiment with lots of things. You got to lead lots of things. You got to forge cultures that were full of justice for, you know, women and minorities, and you know, it was just a really exciting place to be. And for a little while, I worked in a retail store, and for a little while I worked in my husband's business, but it was a disaster. I was just not cut out for working in a warehouse, you know. You
what
can
kind
clearly
of
see that.
Bibs?
We had a natural foods warehouse, and he broke open the market for a lot of the natural foods and organics in the Twin Cities through the co-ops and the bigger stores that were starting to carry natural foods. And he had a vision of being a mom and pop business. He wanted to work with me, his wife, but you know, the job was a warehouse manager, and look at me, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, would you put me in charge of a warehouse? Oh, man. I mean, a truck would deliver, you know, 300 boxes, and I would burst into tears and think, where are we going to put all these boxes? You know, I'm not a warehouse manager. I'm a people person. I finally said, Fred, I love you, but I am breaking up with your business. I'm kind of going to back to school and finishing my degree in psychology. Thank you very much. And so I did. And then not long after that, I was just involved with all these spiritual explorations and emotional healing explorations that were going on in the 80s. There was so much stuff going on that was just unfolding.
Were you also on a journey to heal your own heart at
that
time?
Yes, I was. I was battered and bruised, and I knew it. Mm. So, I was doing therapy and groups and body work and classes and, healings and all sorts of things. So, let's see. Found my way. I was really, really praying my way along to find my work. What's my work? What's my way of healing me and others?
Yes.
I knew it had to do with healing. I knew that. And I didn't think it had to do with being a regular therapist or being a hands-on energy healer. But it was something about healing. And I remember just throwing out a really intense prayer in the fall of 1980. Six, and in the spring, I met my teacher, Dr. Edith Stauffer, at my church, Unity Church, in Golden Valley, just down the road from here.
Yes.
Yeah, I met her there, and I just felt like, oh, this is it. This is it. This is the work. This is my teacher. Let's go.
And you were ready.
I was ready, yeah.
Yeah. Huh. And that's how mentors show up, right? When the student's ready.
Yep. Yep.
The teacher appears.
Yep. And we had, our spirits were very similar. We had the same birthday, too. And that was kind of funny, 45 years apart. We were born on the same day. And she used to finally call me her twin. So, and I felt very flattered by that because I admired her so much.
Were there a group of people that she was working with at the time, or you resonated, connected with her?
I walked right up to her and said, please teach me to do what you do. I think this is my work. And she looked at me and she said, yeah, you're a little rough, but I see it. Yeah. She didn't say that out loud, but I was really a gem in the rough in those days. But she was very patient and very truthful and very ready to bring me up, as a mature person teaching her work. So she was my mentor, my mother, my friend, and my guide for a good 10 years. And then we were peers, and she was very pleased with what I did with her work. She said she felt like I took it to a whole new level, and that she appreciated how my creativity flows in my workshops.
And so she introduced you to the eight steps?
The eight steps, yeah. She developed the eight-step method.
And then how did you evolve them into what you're doing right now?
I used them over and over and over again for myself, and then I started using them for people who were stuck. Like, people would come to me for a psychic reading, because I was doing psychic readings in those days, and they would just describe being so stuck. And like, they were praying, but they felt like God wasn't there, or they couldn't hear God, or they just could not feel their spiritual flow and connection. And I always looked at them and thought, I think it's a resentment. And I would say, is there any chance that you're carrying a big resentment? They'd say, my divorce, whatever. Yeah. Maybe we should do this other thing instead. And then I started just doing the forgiveness work with these people that were stuck. And the results were so amazing that's when I went back and told Edith, I've been doing this with people, and wow, this is it. This is my work to teach me, teach me how to teach this. And so the eight steps are pretty much almost the same. I've refined one of the steps along the way, and I refined how I work with groups so that they can really kind of bond quickly, and also how to lighten up and have fun. And, it was more playful. She was always very kind of dignified, and she always taught it the same way. She told the same stories. She did in the same order. And I'm kind of like a jazz musician when I go into that space. I bring the group together, and then there's certain things I'm going to teach, but certain things are just pure creativity.
And what are those eight steps?
Okay, well, this is how it happens. This is how you heal something.
Okay.
And it can happen in 45 minutes in a session in my office, or it can happen in the workshop, or it can happen on your own. You can spread it out over 2 months or 2 years. It can happen organically if you are open to it. The steps are these. First, you have to decide that you are moving forward from this story, that you are going to let go and release your resentment and move on. It's a will step. I will let this go. Mm-hmm. Step two is to get support and take the time to release the emotional pain. And we use the device of an empty chair in front of us, and we pretend that the person we're mad at or hurt by is sitting in the chair. And we drop into where we're carrying our pain, which is usually in our heart or our belly or our throat. And we give that part of us full permission to let them have it, you know, to say our emotional truths out, like, you know, I hate you actually because you ruined this for me. You can be a big baby, you can be a big victim, you can be very judgmental, you can be, you know, modestly violent to that pillow in the chair or something. You could get your feelings out, your hurt and your anger out, just as it is.
It's really surprising how much is in there.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I just felt when I went through it.
Yeah. You had the big ugly cry.
Yeah.
And yeah, but you know, you probably weren't doing it longer than 20 minutes. The average amount of time that people are venting their pain is about 20 minutes. And it feels like an eternity when you're in the middle of it.
Well, I was thinking, oh, it's not that, you know, it's big, but it's not, you know, I'm not holding it in there that much, you know. And so I was just kind of like, you get into this trance-like state.
You get into a place and the waves of the emotion just kind of keep rising up. They rise up, they rise up, they speak out, they cry out, they vent out, they rise up, and then they're done. Like there's no more waves. Oh, yeah. That was it.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you move to step three. Step three is where we really put into practice the definition of forgiveness, which is forgiveness is releasing an expectation that's causing me to suffer. So we name the positive things that we were attached to having happen from this person that were disappointed or didn't come about. We name them as a preference. I would prefer that you had been respectful to me, but you weren't. And I'm letting this go now, so I release my expectation that you were respectful to me. And you go inside and you breathe and you just find that little piece in there and just allow it to melt out of you. And it does. And then you go to the next one. And I would prefer that you had told me the truth, but you didn't. And I will no longer carry this resentment. I release my expectation that you had told me the truth at that time. And you go inside and you let that go. So there's a handful of positive things that you need to let go your attachment of so you can accept what actually happened and have goodwill for the person, even though you don't need to hang out with them and you don't need to trust them if they're not trustworthy. Mm-hmm. You don't need to get back in relationship with them, but you do need to let go of this resentment because it's keeping you tied.
Sure.
When we've cleared those expectations, we move to step four, which is when we restore our boundaries and we say to the person, I give you total responsibility for your actions and your attitudes, and I just have responsibility for mine. And we visualize your personal space like a light around you, like a bubble, like a field, like an aura around you that is your integrity space.
Mm-hmm.
We visualize it like a colored light defining your space. And we move into step five, where we then open up to the universe or to God, however you want to frame it. We open up to this larger source to get what we need here, to receive just what we need in life. We're going to let this person in front of us off the hook completely. They cannot help us. They cannot be what we wanted.
Right.
We're firing them from that job.
Yeah.
We're opening up to a true source that knows us well and that has our best interests in mind to bring us what we need now and in the future. And then we continue opening up into that spiritual space. In step six, we visualize the soul like a light over the head, like an energy source. And we imagine we can open up the top of the head like a skylight, and we bring that love and light down into the body, the emotions, the mind, the energy system. And we cleanse ourselves with this unconditional love from this higher source. At a certain point, you feel kind of full and empty at the same time.
Yeah.
And you let that light flow through you and then out to the person you're forgiving. That's step seven. I send you this unconditional love just as you are, and I release you to be yourself, and I release me from you to be myself. and we feel this little bridge of love and light between us and this other person. Meanwhile, you have a boundary now, a personal boundary. You have some understanding of who they really are, what they really do and don't do, and you'll say yes and no accordingly in the future. But you have this kind of this unified strand of love that's always going to be there to some tiny extent. And it's going to make you feel good inside. You feel peaceful. Because we need to have goodwill for people. If we have ill will, it hurts us. It's toxic.
Sure.
So then we release them. And then the eighth step is to see the good in them or in the journey, the situation that we've gone through with them. What good has come out of this? And we say that good out loud and we keep our mind rested on that. Then when we turn back to thinking about that person, well, what's good about them?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, you know, he was always funny. He always cared. He never forgot my birthday. I mean, there's like a number of things you can think of about anybody that are good. Hmm. And that's what you keep into the future.
Beautiful process.
It makes sense to most people.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you almost forget the expectation. How powerful our expectations are.
Very powerful. They're tethers. They keep us tied.
Yeah.
To that person and to that past.
Exactly. Are you familiar with Brené Brown
mm-hmm.
at Courage Works?
Yes.
I have felt since I took her online class, Daring Greatly and mm-hmm. Rising Strong,
mm.
and her Rising Strong book is about reckoning with the story,
mm-hmm.
Rumbling with it, going through the process of mm. your feelings,
mm-hmm.
and then using it as a tool to revolutionize your life.
Mm.
There were like 195 exercises
wow.
through the process. I continue to have a strong feeling that you and her should meet in some way.
Well, you arrange that, I'll show up. I'm thinking there's a lot of people that want to meet her. I mean, she's pretty amazing and pretty popular, but yeah.
She is, mm-hmm. But she has pulled in some other people.
Mm-hmm.
Like I just finished an online class on self-compassion because I was kind of curious of, you know, is it that hard to learn or what's going on with that? And so Kristen Neff is a researcher and she's done a lot of work about self-compassion, how to bring those feelings deeply into how you operate and just,
nice.
To, you know, like the warmth of the hand, you know, just physically, you can place them on different parts, like you were, you know, showing
mm-hmm.
where the pain comes up.
Right.
And how to soothe yourself. Mm-hmm. Brené Brown had teamed with her because she felt like that was augmenting mm-hmm. kind of the research that she has found in her book.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that the research that you've done on forgiveness and how impactful it is would be just a place that you could bring it to the world in a framework or
mm-hmm. Well, I hope
something.
You write her a letter and tell her what a fan you are of me and my work and suggest that she find out about it. That'd be awesome.
Okay. I'll do that.
Well, thanks.
Yes. All right. And I hope that manifests itself in some way, because I think that the vision that you've had that you shared with me in 2001
mm-hmm.
of getting this out to the world, and I know you've traveled around, but it just feels like there's a way to do it in a more organized way,
mm-hmm.
in a process that you can work collaboratively with a lot of other people who it just is a powerhouse experience.
Yes, thank you. I'd love to.
Okay. Very good. In the studio, we're going to have Jennifer Nelson come in, and she's been working on a 2-year block,
mm-hmm.
creative block. And she's identified the person that she needs to forgive.
Resentment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's got resentment.
Yeah.
And so in the next session, we're going to have Jennifer Nelson here, and Mary's going to work directly with her. So our audience, you can all
hear. Well, we'll work on kind of
preparing
through
for
the story and kind of looking, analyzing it a little bit in terms of the expectations and the pain and kind of, you know, take the overview of it, and then she and I will privately work on it so she can really let it rip.
And, right. This is not something that...
I'm not going to do the healing work on air, but maybe you'll be able to check back in with her later and see how she felt different.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Great. All right.
I look forward to that.
Well, terrific. Can't wait. And that'll be coming up soon. So thank you again for being here.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yes. And I would love to continue at another time. We certainly will.
Okay. To be continued.
Yes, that's right. Okay. Thanks so much, Mary. Thanks, Mike Abea, sound engineer.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Mike. We'll see you all next time.
Great. See you next Monday. Bye.